This is the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media. Now, here's Jason Jones.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the Jason Jones Show. I am your host, Jason Jones, broadcasting from the very cold hill country of Texas. And as you can tell, I am a bit under the weather. I've got a sore throat, a cough, I'm sick, but I had to do today's show. I wanted to get a response from Prime Minister Salih Hidayat on the comments from the one of the co-owners of the NBA's Golden State Warriors, Chamath Palihapitiya. I don't know if I said that right. And I don't, he doesn't care about the Uyghur, and I don't even care if I mispronounce Palihapitiya. On the list of things I care about, you know, it doesn't even break the surface. But if you're woke, you get upset about, you know, people mispronouncing names from different countries, which, of course, they're going to mispronounce those names. Anyways, we're going to talk to Prime Minister Salih Hidayat about the comments from the Golden State Warrior owner on the growing momentum of the boycott, the Beijing Olympics, of how the world now knows about the Uyghur genocide. Is this comforting to the Uyghurs, or is this something that's actually demoralizing? We're going to talk to him about that and more. This episode is being brought to you by MyPillow.com. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the code Jones for deep discounts. You know, if I would have been wearing some furry socks with my MyPillow slippers around the house, I wouldn't even have this cough. I have the slipper, so I have no excuse. But you may not have the slippers, so go to MyPillow.com, use the code Jones, click on the radio listener square, and get those slippers, walk around the house so you don't get this cough that I have. This episode is also being brought to you by the Vulnerable People Project, standing in solidarity with the most vulnerable people in the world during their most challenging times. When you become a monthly donor, you are the backbone of the work we do. And because of you, our donors, we have not had to say no to anyone from Afghanistan who has reached out to us for help. It's come close. So we need, if you're not a supporter, go to thegreatcampaign.org and become a monthly donor. And all monthly donors get a free copy of my book with the great John Zmirak, The Race to Save Our Century. Okay, now for my interview with Prime Minister in Exile, Salih Hidayat. Salih, welcome to the show.
Good to be back. Thank you for having me, as always, Jason.
So you were the first person I called when Chamath Palihapitiya said the most absurd thing I had ever heard. And it actually got me excited because I thought this is going to become a big story and Salih must be happy about this. And I called you, and that's when I knew we had to do an interview. You weren't excited about this. You had sounded like, you know, you... We're very depressed. Tell us what's, you know, we went from a place where people didn't know, and then our goal was to inform people. And now people are informed, and they're telling us they don't care. So when I heard this, I thought, great, another opportunity for us to amplify the truth of what's happening in Chinese-occupied East Turkestan. When you heard this from a powerful billionaire, I think he's first generation, How did this make you feel?
I mean, honestly, when I read this, when I watched his video, actually, it made me feel disgusted, and it was very depressing because, you know, when you don't have information, that's something else. If you're ignorant of it and you say, I don't care, that's something else. But this guy, he clearly knew about it, and he said, you know, I don't care, because when I think about this, it's at the bottom of my line, at the bottom of my list, you know. Who cares about the Uyghurs? Nobody cares, you know. We have to focus on, you know, he was talking about his economic, you know, deals, and he was actually praising, you know, the Chinese Communist Party, saying that, you know, it wasn't a dictatorship, that, you know, it wasn't all bad, and as things say, that as being seen, but being a billionaire, being, you know, an owner of an NBA team, being in, you know, 2022, where everybody around the world, majority of the people, especially, you know, influential people, especially people who read the news, who keep up with current events, they are aware about what's going on. Nobody can deny this. I mean, numerous governments and parliaments, including the U.S. government, have, you know, came out and recognized this officially as a genocide. There are, you know, tons of evidence, even, you know, you can see it even on Google Earth, these concentration camps, the 1,200 plus concentration camps where Uyghurs are being held. There are videos on YouTube showing Uyghurs, you know, with their heads shaven, being, you know, transported into, you know, trains like cattle. So it made me feel very disgusted and very disappointed and depressed, because when you hear this from a powerful billionaire, this is what the elite of the world, not just here in the United States, but in the world, think about this. And it's because of their silence on this that China is able to continue the genocide of the Uyghurs. It's been, you know, since 2016, so it's been about, what, almost 6 years, going on to the seventh, since China started locking up millions of Uyghurs, according to the U.S. Department of Defense, over 3 million Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and Kyrgyz people in East Turkestan were sent to concentration camps as of May 2019.
Yeah, I didn't meet you long after they began the mass lockups, and it would be really disheartening. We would walk around Capitol Hill to talk to members of Congress, and they didn't know what we were talking. They didn't know the word Uyghur, right? And recently when I was at a, I think it was Office Max, the young man behind the counter, I was working on Afghanistan initiative, and the young man behind the counter said, well, that's good that you're doing that, but you need to start fighting for the Uyghur too. And then I called you and had you talk to this young man. So we went from a place where not that long ago, members of Congress didn't know what we were talking about. Media, media personalities, news broadcasters, radio talk show hosts, prominent ones we talked to, didn't know what was happening in Chinese-occupied East Turkestan. Now we're to the point where, you know, a large percentage of the world knows. I think most Americans know. And yet, what this gentleman, I don't want to call him, what this scoundrel, this effeminate viper said, yeah, I don't care. I'm about money. And this is what I'm going to translate to what I heard, Sally. He said, you know, it doesn't interest me. What interests me is things that affect me and things that powerful people that can hurt me care about. Like, if they care about them, I'll care about them. If the mob cares about it, if governments care about it, then I'll care about it. He said that. He said, when governments care about it, I will care about it. But isn't that the history of the world? Governments don't care. And the people have to push. The governments of the world did not care about apartheid. They did not care about Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge. They did not care. And people pushed big business and governments to care. And now we're hearing this, and this guy has no shame. He's like proud of it. He's snarky. He's, I don't care. No, no, no. I care about myself. It's pathetic. And this is, I think he perfectly expressed the sentiments of what we call the ruling elite in the Western world. And they are arm in arm, the partners with the CCP. Would you think that's fair that the ruling elite of the West, from Berlin to Washington, D.C., they are, this is, he's expressing their sentiments, and they are in lockstep with the CCP. Is that fair?
I totally agree with you. I'd have to say that's very accurate. I mean, when I first came to Washington, D.C. 4 years ago, I had many great hopes. I mean, I came to the U.S. almost 22 years ago as a political refugee. I grew up, you know, in a Chinese-occupied East Turkestan where there's no freedom, no, you know, rights. And the first thing I'll mention, the first thing that shocked me when I stepped out of the airport in Dallas, Texas, that's where I arrived, Dallas-Fort Worth, the first thing that I noticed was there were no soldiers around. Growing up in East Turkestan, you see soldiers almost every 500 meters. So I thought it was very strange that there were no soldiers around. And I asked my father, why are there no soldiers? Like, where are all the soldiers? Where are the guns? Because that's what we always had pointed to our heads wherever we went. And he explained, you know, there's none of that here. He said, you won't see that. The only time you'll see that is if you go, you know, to a military base or somewhere that's, you know, of high security value. And for me, that was quite shocking. And I grew up in America, you know, in Oklahoma, spent most of my life in Oklahoma, hoping, you know, that, you know, in Oklahoma, a lot of people there, unlike in Washington, D.C., you know, they actually care. And people are friendly. They care about their neighbors. And that was my impression of all Americans. So this was because I spent most of my life in Oklahoma. And then I came to D.C. hoping that everybody here would care about our issue and, you know, things would work out well. But unfortunately, you know, either that I found that there's a lot of Chinese, you know, influence in D.C. in every, you know, whether it's in governments or, you know, government, you know, the Congress, whether it's in, you know, government agencies or even in, you know, organizations and businesses, China has, you know, either through fear has instilled a lot of, you know, influence or has just been able to, you know, unfortunately put profits over, you know, the lives of human beings and able to convince politicians, companies, and many, you know, agencies to just stand silent on what's happening to the Uyghurs in East Turkestan.
You know, I wish that it was ideology, but I don't think it was ideology. I think it was just, he demonstrated it's just money. It's shameless self-interest.
Absolutely. I mean, like, think of it. I mean, this guy's net worth is estimated to be around $1.2 billion. You know, he owns an NBA team, and NBA, you know, the NBA has been, you know, gained a lot of negative spotlight because of, you know, their efforts to censor people like myself, like you. We actually think that you can't even bring an East Turkestan flag or even talk about the Uyghurs or even see Uyghurs t-shirt at an NBA game because it offends China. And like, if you think about it, if you know, Palapatia or billionaire, if he had said, you know, yes, I care about the Uyghurs, and you know what China is doing to them, you know, deplorable, it's inhumane. You know, what would have been, you know, what could have that statement have done? It would have given, you know, a lot of hope to the Uyghurs. It would have probably empowered others to step up. You know, Enes Kanter, he's the only NBA player that is speaking out against, you know, China's genocide in East Turkestan, and a lot of people became encouraged by that. Sure, you know, there were some pushbacks by then. The Chinese government could have, you know, damage, you know, the statements could have, you know, damaged his business or investment. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Well, Prime Minister, that's the point. Those words were not accident. He knew China was listening. If China wasn't listening, he would have looked in the camera and he'd have said, I care. You know, we really care about this issue. And if there's something we can do, we'll do it, you know? No, he knew China was, he was performing for the CCP. He was tap dancing. Xi was playing the flute, and Palihapitiya, we got to give him a nickname, CP, old CP. CP was tap dancing. He was tap dancing for Xi. You've got billion, you would think these guys had ego. We're told, you know, all these rich guys, they've got ego, they've got pride. He's a punk. He's got $1 billion. He's worth over $1 billion, and he has no dignity. He has no shame, no pride. He's a billion-dollar slave.
Exactly. I mean, at what point are you going to, sacrifice your free will, sacrifice your humanity for money? And with someone with $1 billion, what are you going to do with that money? Are you going to be able to take that money to the grave with you? No, because at the end of the day, regardless of whether we're rich or poor, we're all going to go into, a 60-deep grave, 6x6 grave. That's it.
Yeah, and there are things worth more than money. Yes, let's say you believe that, that there's no God and that it all ends. And this is, you just blink out when you die. You would still hope that you had some sense of empathy for immense, incomprehensible human suffering. And this guy lives in the cream of life. But yet he's a slave, which is really sorrowful. He's chained by his wealth. I had a friend, Sally, who was a Navy SEAL. And after the SEALs, he went to work at the White House. And then from there, he went to work for a hedge fund manager, a big company hedge fund guy, and who was a billionaire in New York. And this billionaire he worked for missed a close family member's funeral because he said he couldn't get away from the office because he just had too much work to do. And so my friend walked away from that industry. He said, I had thought by becoming wealthy, I would become free. And so I thought by working here, working in this industry, this would be an opportunity for me to become a free person. And when I saw that this guy who was a billionaire had to miss a family member's funeral because of work, then he realized he had become a slave. And he didn't want to be a slave. And so he walked away. And I mean, I think that's the sorrow. And CCP knows our number, right? They know our number. They know the numbers of all of these little lemmings that work for these corporations, climbing their way up the corporate ladder with soulless, no will, no courage, will never risk, never be daring. And then they know how to play these ambitious twit entrepreneurs. And they know how to play them because of they're shackled by wealth. And so China honeypots them with this huge market and with slave labor.
Unfortunately, that's what's the scariest thing. I mean, is the fact that, these business elites, many of them, many businesses, they all claim, they have, business ethics and that they respect human rights or they care about human rights and humanity. And whether you look at their, any corporate business, when you look at their websites, they have all these, values and ethics that they claim to have, at least on paper. And then in reality, they don't have that. In reality, they are willing to engage in business with a regime that's engaging in genocide. Because, this guy Chamath said he doesn't care because it's his interest. And his, he's got to make his money. But also it's like the consumers, it's also the consumers that we have a responsibility, to boycott these goods, these services provided by, these companies and entities that are, working with the Chinese communist government. If I was in, if I had any investments, like for example, he manages this guy Chamath, he's an investor. He manages a lot of investment funds. If I was anyone that's listening, or anyone that was doing business with him, just because of what he stated, I would stop. I would put my investment somewhere else. I'd find another investor to work with, rather than this guy.
Yeah, like a pornographer. Invest in pornography. At least they're honest. This guy's whole investment fund is based on social justice, because social justice for him is a shtick to lure suckers, because he's a grifter. He's a con artist, right? So if you're going to invest in something immoral, just go invest in pornography, because at least they're telling you the truth. This guy, He's luring you with, I'm going to be socially aware. What does that mean? Yeah, we're going to invest in electric cars. Oh, so African kids can, you know, mine your lithium? Okay, that's good. But so they're full. He's full of it. He's upset. The poor guys, they're like zombies, right? They're zombies. They don't even know. This might be good for him and a lot of people because they need to wake up. I mean, they need to look at themselves in the mirror and go, what kind of thin-souled ghoul have I become?
Absolutely. I mean, even he tried to issue a clarification. You know, even in his clarification, he said that, you know, he was, that, you know, he didn't mean to be unempathetic and that, you know, he came from a, you know, he himself was a refugee and, you know, he came from a background where they dealt with human rights issues, but even in that statement, he refused to mention the Uyghurs. He refused to, you know, actually offer a genuine apology. So it was just that made me even more upset. I mean, his excuse my language, his half-assed apology.
Yeah, no, the apologies are worse, right? The only apology would be, listen, I'm a pathetic, vapid, soulless human being, and it disgusts me as much as it disgusts you, and I need help. You know, I think that's it. That would be it. We'd go, oh, okay, yeah, you got it. All right, you're on your way to recovery right there, because that is the truth, right? But that's so many of the people in power. That's so, I mean, look at Joe Biden with Afghanistan. This man said no regrets. He didn't have to say that. He could have said, you know, this withdrawal comes with a lot of regrets, as war and everything surrounding war does. And there's no easy way out. And this was ugly. And my heart breaks. No, no regrets. Million kids starving. No regrets. Women being systematically raped. No regrets. CP, you know, 3 million people enforced in concentration camps, organ harvesting, systematic rape, systematic murder. This doesn't register on my radar. But I guarantee you he obsesses on the Uyghur. For him, I bet you he thinks, if you can't be a co-owner of the NBA and not think about the Uyghur issue a lot and how it's going to affect you and your relationship with China, you know, because it's frightening for them. So he knew this was an answer he had prepared. This was his prepared answer because, again, he was tap dancing for Xi. I promise you this was his prepared answer.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, they prefer, you know, profit. And so in order to preserve their business interests, they know what upsets China and what doesn't. And it's, China has a very clear line. You know, they've been trying to punish anyone with any, you know, whether it's activists, whether it's businesses, athletes, you know, even, you know, like, as I mentioned earlier, Enes Kanter, you know, like, he spoke out and, you know, China flexed its muscles and, you know, presumably pressured the NBA, the Celtics, to stop, you know, showing one, stop, you know, using Kanter on the field, and to stop, you know, showing the Celtics games in China. And this hurts the NBA, this hurts the Celtics, and this is one way of punishing them and discouraging others from speaking out. But at the end of the day, like, when are we going to, you know, continue to sell? When are we going to stop selling our humanity for profit? When are we going to actually do something right? Every year, world leaders, you know, from leaders to individuals all across the world, from athletes to celebrities, everyone, when it comes to, you know, Holocaust remembrance, everybody says never again. You know, on Holocaust remembrance, they send out a tweet, put up a post on Facebook, on Instagram, stating that, you know, never again, we've all never again. Yet never again is happening right now in the 21st century. and they are complicit to that. What upsets me the most, Jason, is not the fact that there are vile people like, you know, Chamath and other, you know, elites like him who disregard human life. That's not what upsets me. What upsets me the most is the fact that there are many good people. There are many good people across the world who, you know, deep in their hearts, they show solidarity. They care about the issues, but they are silent. They are silent out of fear. And that's what upsets me the most. Even many Uyghurs across the global diaspora, even here in the United States, I know, you know, many Uyghurs, majority of them, in fact, who are silent because of fear. And that's what upsets me the most. You know, these people, they have their family members in the camps, yet they're not even willing to publicly speak out against it because of this fear. And this fear is what, you know, China uses to control us and all of humanity.
You know, I have fear. I have sympathy. I understand if you're Uyghur and you're afraid to speak out, because you have loved ones, or I can have charity for them. But if you're an American, they can't, China cannot touch you. You're a billionaire owner of the NBA. Bring on the fight. You will win that fight. China will, they don't want it to, it will set, you know, in this cancer, freedom is starting a fire. You know, you and I have gone to NBA games, gotten thrown out. Police have asked, you know, escort us out. And one of the best moments was when the Budweiser guy, get you Budweiser here, that guy, as the police were throwing us out of the stadium, the fans were cheering for us, and the Budweiser guy on camera with everyone looking at him and us and him being on camera was saying, why are you throwing him out for telling the truth? He's just telling the truth. That guy, he might have lost his job. We don't know if that guy lost his job. He didn't care, right? That guy, the Budweiser guy, if he lost his job, that's a big deal, right? That's a big deal. If Chamath stood with the Uyghur, what could China do to him? Really? Nothing. And pick a fight with him. If I'm a billionaire, co-owner of an NBA team, I'm picking a fight with China, and I'm not going to lose. That's the sad thing. And I think a lot of people listen, especially with my organization, like, Jason, we have to right our ship first, and they're correct. Because the American working class and middle class are the hope of the world, and we are embattled in at every direction, right? We're being kicked out of our job because we don't get a vaccine. We're being locked in our house, masked up. Our kids are doing teleschool. Inflation is going out of control. We're barely keeping, we're making ends meet and keeping our head above water. And this is a bad thing, because if you keep the American working class and middle class is struggling to survive, then the rest of the vulnerable people in the world don't have a voice, because we are their voice. So yes, we have to right our ship. We have to kick the pirates out. We have to take back our institutions, our universities, the State Department, our police departments, and our intelligence agencies. They need to serve the will of the American people, not the interests of the elite, who seem to be arm in arm with the CCP. I mean, I don't know about you, Sally. I still cannot boost anything I post on Facebook about the Uyghur. They do not let me advertise it. Have you guys been successful advertising on social media for the Uyghur?
Not on Facebook. Not on Facebook. I mean, for whatever reason, we can't. They say it's political and they won't let us,
you know,
do any advertisements.
You're allowed, if you deny the Holocaust on Facebook, you are kicked off. So if you deny the Holocaust, you are kicked off. If you deny the genocide happening in Chinese occupied East Turkestan, you're shadow banned, silenced, and cannot boost your posts. The good news is maybe in 100 years, 70 years, if people try to deny the Uyghur genocide, they'll kick them off of Facebook. Maybe that's what will happen. In 70 years, Facebook will say, how dare you deny the Uyghur genocide? You're kicked off. But we'll have to wait 7 years for that, because right now we can't even boost our posts. So, you know, we're about to spend a lot of money hitting every list we can at the Vulnerable People Project, pushing this. Laura Ingraham came up with a line that I thought was, you and I think might have been the first two guys that kind of launched this boycott the Beijing Olympics thing over a year ago. and it's building steam. And Laura Ingraham yesterday or 2 days ago, she said, you know, not 1 minute. So we're sending out an email asking people not to watch 1 minute of the Olympics and not to buy one product from the sponsors. And we're going to email every list that we can rent. You know, because social media has become useless for us. We just can't use social media except for Getter. Oh, by the way, follow me at Getter, the Jason Jones Show, at the Jason Jones Show on Getter. Sully, are you on Getter yet?
No, I haven't. I'm not too familiar with Getter.
Getter is it's the fastest growing social media platform in history, and it's replacing Twitter. And you have there's a lot of support for the Uyghurs there. All day, every day.
Did Parler change? Because I thought it was, I had like Parler.
You know, look, I've been very slow to, I don't like Twitter. I don't like the Twitter model because it's relentless. Andrew Breitbart was one of my best friends and like Twitter was his job. He just lived on Twitter and I don't want to be consumed by it. But I have been on Getter because Steve Bannon, I'm on Steve Bannon's show a lot and he plugs it. And so I thought I'm going to do this. And it's just been a great resource for us to educate people. And they would give you a blue check. You know, you would be acknowledged. You'd get an official blue check account. And Getter's the place. And, oh, this is my point to your point about Parler. There were so many new platforms, I didn't know which ones were going to pop. So I was just waiting to see which one really took off. And it was just timing, right? There's a tide in the affairs of men. Joe Rogan got kicked off just as Getter was picking up steam. And he moved to Getter, and Tulsi Gabbard moved to Getter, and Ines Cantus Freedom moved to Getter, and Royce White moved to Getter. And so all these guys, and you know, Royce is on Getter all day, every day, talking the NBA, former NBA player, just a great person, human being, talking about the Uyghur. So it's a place that you need to be. Let me ask you, let me ask you this. When we talked last night, I said, you need to get fired up because the next couple of weeks are the greatest opportunity we have to educate and inspire the world to solidarity with the Uyghur. But yet, it's demoralizing to know that so many people care. I mean, know, but don't care. It's one thing that they don't know, and you're like, all I have to do is get them to know. And then you're like, they know, and they don't care. That's demoralizing because you didn't see that coming, right? You just thought, once they know, they'll care. But now we realize it's a two-step process. They have to know, and then we have to inspire them to care. The Olympics is our opportunity. You know, the next couple of weeks. What can you give us a sense in the Uyghur community? Do they understand? How is the morale?
I mean, our morale is very low. I mean, This mass internment, this genocide has been going on for the past 5 years, going on into the sixth. It's been 72 years we've been facing colonization and occupation. The international community, it's been a year since, you know, the U.S. government officially recognized it as a genocide. Yet nothing, you know, truly meaningful is being done. Even in the diaspora, you know, we like inside East Turkestan, we can't help many of them there, you know. That's one thing. But even in the diaspora, many Uyghurs, even here in the United States, many of them who have been here for years, they're, you know, still haven't gotten their asylum applications approved. They are struggling getting work permits, you know, providing for their families, you know, with all these things adding up, everyone is very demoralized and, you know, helpless. And especially when you have elites coming out and saying that they don't care, that's what, you know, crushes our hope, is that, you know, it's these influential people, these elites that governments tend to listen to more. And these are the type of people that are, you know, whispering into the ears, putting into the pockets of politicians and telling them to avoid, you know, upsetting China, avoid taking any actions to actually stop this genocide, just so they can continue, you know, making their profits.
Are they able to, is communication at all improving inside East Turkestan, Xinjiang? As
no, no, it? No.
It's worse than ever.
I mean, it's worse. I mean, last time I was able to communicate with anyone in East Turkestan was 2017. 5 years ago, almost. And many of us, you know, all of us in the diaspora, we don't even know if our family members inside East Turkestan are alive, if they're dead, we don't know. And that's the scariest thing. Living in the 21st century, where you could easily call them, you could easily message them in any part of the world, but for us, it's been years. We can't.
And when was the last time there had been international an investigation into East Turkestan?
Never.
Never.
Never. That's the thing. There has been no international body to go into East Turkestan and actually investigate on the ground. You know, a lot of foreign journalists that have been trying to go in there, they're, you know, harassed and they're, you know, not even allowed to go in. And China is just controlling everything so intensively to where nobody knows what's truly going on inside East Turkestan, except from, you know, the few things that leak out every now and then and what the official, you know, narrative of the Chinese government, you know, propaganda media puts out.
Disney's been there. They shot up. I mean, to think that Mulan was an anti... It was the most racist movie ever made, right in front of everyone's very eyes. And they shot it in sight of concentration camps.
Yes, they have this in, you know, in fact, Disney shot their Mulan film within, you know, 50 miles of 8 different concentration camps. Within 50 miles, and in fact, going onto the site, the road that you take, you know, you can visibly see from the road that you take onto their shooting site. There's only one road. You can visibly see, you know, 4 different concentration camps. But of course, the movie Mulan in itself, like the people, you know, like the Huns in the movie, those are actually the Uyghurs. If you look at it. The story, it's the Huns are fighting back against, you know, the Chinese Empire, the emperor, because they took over their land and they killed their people. And so they're trying to, you know, push back. And yet they are demonized as, you know, as barbarians for, you know, resisting against what is essentially an occupation of their land. And in that film, the modern perception of this is that's the Uyghurs. And so this is the way that the Chinese government, you know, it's been using it as a propaganda to further demonize the Uyghurs. And the Chinese government, you know, through their propaganda, they call Uyghurs barbarians, you know, uncivilized people, and that what they are doing, you know, they're, quote, these concentration camps are for re-education and these slave labor camps are providing them with jobs, and China is, you know, by forcing the Uyghurs to abandon their culture, their language, their identity, China is, quote, modernizing them, developing them, etc. It's extremely racist.
It would be as if during World War II, the Nazis shot a movie about, you know, Germans invading Poland, and they made the Poles out to be some sort of like nefarious monsters.
Absolutely.
And Disney did it in broad daylight, and we took our children there.
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of thing, you know, the Chinese government has, as I said, they have, you know, essentially, you know, what do you call it, infiltrated every walks of society. They have, you know, infiltrated Hollywood, they have infiltrated the NBA, they have infiltrated, you know,
numerous companies, and they're just using their influence to.
You know, somebody gave me a good idea. So we, you know, next year we need to make it Uyghur season. Every game has to be a home game. Every game is in East Turkestan. We need to fill it with Uyghur flags, East Turkestan flags, and shirts that just say Uyghur. A friend of mine said, who was with us when we got thrown out in Washington, D.C., their excuse was they don't allow political commentary on shirts or signs, which is clearly a lie, right? Like, that, of course, that's a lie. But he said, let's just have a huge banner next year, next season. Let's just fill the stadium with banners that say Uyghur. That's it. Because just the name will be too much for China. And the NBA, what will they do? How would they throw us out if we had a shirt that said Irish or Polish or German, or banners that said Ireland, Poland, or Germany? Would they? But if we unfurl banners and wear T-shirts that just say, not free the Uyghur, just say Uyghur, they're going to throw us out, right? Of course, because their slave master, Xi, won't tolerate that kind of dissent. And that is going to really demonstrate once and for all this hypocrisy. And not to get political with you, because you have to be diplomatic, and I've never asked you your politics, but you can't deny it. The loudest, most vocal support for the Uyghur is coming from conservatives and from the Republican Party. So as Republicans take the House, maybe we can get committees, we can call the NBA owners into Congress, you know, and this is going to be a relentless battle. And what they need to know, we are not going away. They think we're going to fatigue, we're going to quit, we're going to go away. Have you been shocked, or maybe it's just because I'm a conservative, it just seems to me that I mean, to see Steve Bannon every day on his show talking about the Uyghur, every day. You know, 10 years ago, I would have thought this would have been Rachel Maddow talking about this. But what you find out is the left never talks about the hard issue when it's hard. I don't want to put those words in your mouth, but that's what I see. Am I missing it? Are there voices from the left that are speaking out, powerful, influential voices that I'm missing?
Unfortunately, I wish there were. There are some, you know, Democratic congressmen and senators who are speaking out, but as far as, you know, others, they're largely silent. In fact, there's, now that you bring up this point, I want to highlight this new report that was just unveiled, investigation by Newsline magazine. They found that, you know, that a network of charities, you know, funneling billions into left-wing platforms, you know, they are taking China's side on the genocide of the Uyghurs.
This is unbelievable. All for money.
Unfortunately, yeah. Like, for example, like a lot of these... I have nothing against, you know, Black Lives Matter. I support their you know, efforts.
Who's that? I missed that. You broke up, Prime Minister.
I said I'm not against Black Lives Matter, and okay. In fact, I support their efforts. You know, to advocate for, you know, the rights of Black people here in the United States. And many of these groups that are you know, aligned with them are actually, unfortunately, taking China's side on the genocide of the Uyghurs. So it's very disheartening to see that, you know, the left is just extremely silent. You know, they talk about, you know, human rights issues here, but they focus on, you know, when you bring up the genocide of the Uyghurs, they're completely, you know, silent. Like Code Pink, for example, which is you know, one of the big prominent left groups. You know, they have been, you know, they initiated a campaign in 2020, saying China is not our enemy, and, you know, they were saying that on their website. You know, the FAQ section on the Uyghur said, you know, our concern is that It's being used as a tool to drive the U.S.'s hybrid war on terror, quote. You know, saying that the Uyghur genocide is...
You broke up there. So the code pink, the only reason they're pink is because they're old red. They were red when they were young. They're old and weathered, and so they look pink, but they're still red. So they're communists. They're Maoists, actually. They're Maoists, like Xi. So, but what did they say? What did they say? The U.S., they're afraid that it's used to drive what now?
They're saying that, you know, it's fake, that it's a total lie, and that it's being used as a tool to drive, you know, the U.S.'s hybrid war on China, saying that, you know, the fight of the Uyghurs is not an issue. It's not real. All these type of things, and it's just...
If this were true, it wouldn't just be fringe conservative Christian activists like myself that were banging the drum. It would be Nancy Pelosi. It would be Joe Biden. It would be Mitt Romney. Right? I mean, this is where it would be coming from if this were the case. If this were, and by the way, I don't care. I hope that powerful special interests find it's in their benefit to tell the truth about this genocide, right? I mean, that's the only way we get powerful special interests to care, is to show them how it impacts their interests. So that's not even an argument that it's being used. Yeah, okay, so like the Holocaust was, you know, they didn't talk about the Holocaust, by the way, either. If that gives you, I mean, that's not comforting, right? The New York Times never mentioned the Holocaust as it was unraveling long after they knew what was happening. The New York Times, the only time it got coverage was when the Pope gave his Easter message in the New York Times. That was the only time, if you read the New York Times in the 40s, leading up to the end of World War II, that you would have learned about what was happening to the Jews in Europe. And it's the same thing. So Code Pink, they're just a Maoist front. And I probably shouldn't say this, but who cares? Because they're not going to be of any use to me anyways. I have friends, you know, BLM is made up of three types of folks. Really good, beautiful people. I have friends in BLM, good friends, like a sister who I love, is a very active member. Well, she was, I should say that. I think she's been disenchanted. But you have really good, earnest people. And then you have Bolsheviks, you have Maoists, you have hardcore Marxists, and then you just have grifters looking for money and a good time and where everyone else is going. And so that's BLM, right? Like anything else. But I don't know if I told you this, through my friend who's in the entertainment industry, who's friends with Sean King, she put me on a text thread with Sean King. Did I tell you this? The founder of BLM.
No, no.
And I texted him repeatedly. I have his personal text right in my phone. I texted him repeatedly, please tweet Uyghur Lives Matter. And he said he would. I was so excited. I thought, this is going to be unbelievable. Right? I don't want to get political points on the left with this. I would love to see the Democrats in Congress lead the way on getting the Uyghurs let out of the camps and putting an end to the genocide. And forgive me, guys, with the cough as I'm losing my voice. I would love to see that. I don't want political points. I would have loved for BLM to get the victory to wake America up. But Sean King, for whatever reason, didn't do it after saying he would, you know, and I just gave up messaging him on that. So it's very sad. I think that's what we need to do, though, right? We need a broad-based coalition across the political spectrum, left to right, together as Americans, saying the one thing we agree on, if there's anything we agree on, it's that we don't want to be culpable in a genocide, which we all are culpable, especially with this Olympics, especially with the NBA and FIFA intertwined with China, especially with all of us, including myself. I guarantee you have products that were made by Uyghur slaves. If I say that if we were to put a blue light through all of our houses, mine included, it would be covered in blood. And so we're all culpable. This is disgusting. So we need to decouple ourselves from the slave state of the CCP. And when we begin to decouple ourselves, I think China will respond. We won't have to decouple our economy from the CCP. We'll just have to begin decoupling our economy from the CCP, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, it starts with, you know, the people, you know, it starts with us, you know, by boycotting, you know, Chinese goods and services, by boycotting, you know, companies that are knowingly operating, for example, Tesla. You know, Tesla just recently opened up a showroom in East Turkestan, in Urumqi, you know, in an area that, you know, within like 30 miles, you have multiple concentration camps.
This is heartbreaking
I used to respect Elon Musk. Like, I used to be a big, you know, fan of Elon Musk. But after that, I lost complete respect for him. The fact that, you know, it's not that he doesn't know. It's not that he doesn't know what China's doing. Again, this is not, you know, people like Elon Musk, they know what's going on. But the fact that knowingly they're operating in a region, you know, to where China's engaging in full-blown genocide is just disgusting. And, you know, like, I will never, you know, have respect for Elon after that. I mean, if he had done this, you know, like years ago, like if this was like before they started locking up Uyghurs in concentration camps, and he had, you know, a showroom there or a factory there, and, you know, they, you know, I wouldn't be as upset. But the fact that, despite the fact that, you know, the world, many countries, especially the United States, has recognized it as genocide, they, you know, and this comes right after the passage of the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act into law, the signing of that into law, and he does this. It just disheartens me to see how, you know, these billionaires, these, you know, tech companies, these, you know, businesses that claim to value, care about human rights, that care about, you know, the future of humanity, I don't actually care. You know, if Elon claims that he wants to go to Mars to save humanity, how can you save humanity when you're willing to operate in an area that's engaging in genocide, when you're willing to, you know, work with a regime that's engaging in genocide, that is waging a war against humanity here on Earth?
No, it's really easy. No, Elon Musk is someone that I really looked up to, and I thought he was an admirable guy. And I, you know, he's the guy I think that this probably did tear him up. And you wonder what sort of inner turmoil, but it's sort of like a ritual. It just seems so bizarre that they would have him do that. It's as if he had to publicly shame himself. It's like a cultural revolution for billionaires around the globe that they have to go to China and publicly shame themselves, to throw their dignity on the ground. They have to apostatize from all the ideas of the West, like they would make Christian missionaries step on the cross or spit on the cross. This is, they make all of these Western global elites, these billionaires, go to China and then spit on all of the things that they claim to believe in. So when he opened up that showroom in East Turkestan, that was Elon Musk publicly apostatizing, publicly renouncing everything he has ever said about what he believes, about freedom, independence, peace, all of that, care for humanity. He had to say, I'm a hypocrite. And it has to be demoralizing to the Chinese population. There's just China and then the West in chaos. We've lost our narrative. China has not lost its narrative, but we have lost ours. And it must be very demoralizing to everyone within China, everyone in Cuba, everyone in Venezuela. It has to be very demoralizing. We're no longer the city on the hill. Hill, now I want to wrap this up with some practical steps. We have a petition it's going to be in the show notes, ccpgenocideolympics.com. You go to ccpgenocideolympics.com, And we'll have it also at movietomovement.com and the vulnerable people or the greatcampaign.org. And but we have our petition up there, and we're asking everyone to sign it, and we're sending it to all of the sponsors of the Olympics that we are pledging that we will never be a customer of yours again if you participate in any way in these genocide Olympics, and that we will it will bring shame to your brands for decades and decades. And I think this will be the last Olympics. If these Olympics happen, I think they will be the last Olympics because they will be so damaging to their brand. So China will create another, it'll be another great achievement for China. They'll have destroyed this great Western institution of brotherhood and peace. They will have destroyed the Olympics. What, Prime Minister Hedaya, what is your organization doing? Are there any initiatives that people listening to, that can get involved in with your organization? How can they donate to you? And I really want you guys to support Prime Minister Hedaya. There are not a lot of Uyghurs in the United States, and, those that are here are really working very hard just to make ends meet. They might be a doctor, but they're driving a taxi cab. They might be an engineer, but they're working in a restaurant. So it's not like there's a lot of folks to draw from as a base for donors. Prime Minister, how many Uyghur are there in the United States?
In the United States, I mean, there's an estimated, you know, at least 10,000, upwards of 15,000 Uyghurs. Very scattered out across the United States. The most who are in the Washington, D.C., Virginia area.
So to put that in perspective, there are more listeners to the Jason Jones Show than there are Uyghurs in the United States, right? So if you're listening to this show, you need to support Prime Minister Hedaya and his work. And you're combating China, right? This is the biggest David and Goliath battle of all time.
Yes, some of the things that we're doing, obviously, is we want to urge everyone, as you stated yourself, to, you know, boycott, you know, even watching the Olympics, to boycott, companies that are sponsoring the Olympics, to boycott their products. And this will send a message to them that, you know, to those companies, to China, that they are not, that the people, you know, the average people across the world, they're not, you know, going to be complicit. They're not going to be, you know, buying products, consuming, you know, products that are made by companies or consuming services with companies that are in bed with the Chinese Communist Party and its genocidal regime. Additionally, you know, we have events almost every other month where we, you know, protest against the Chinese government. We are also trying to enact new legislation, stronger legislation to help the Uyghurs, whether it's to, you know, expedite the asylum applications or whether it's to take more meaningful, strong actions by the government. We want to, you know, urge everyone to write to their members of Congress, asking them to, you know, pressure the U.S. State Department, to pressure the Biden administration to take, you know, meaningful actions to help the Uyghurs, to send in, you know, an actual investigative body on the ground to investigate, at the very least, to investigate what is going on, to, you know, stop investing, you know, U.S., you know, taxpayers' money into, you know, Chinese companies and other things, because there's a lot of, you know, government funds, you know, even by the U.S. government, you know, ends up being invested in China, and many of them are connected with, you know, the Chinese government. And their operations in East Turkestan.
And what website? Can you give us the website?
Yes, they can visit us at east-turkestan.net or follow us on, you know, ET Awakening or ETXL.gov on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and so forth.
Can you do me a favor? Start a Getter account, and then I'm going to send it to my friends at Getter to make sure that it gets recognized as an official account. You get that blue check. I think it's blue.
Got it. I just actually.
I think it's an orange check. Start
up one. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, get it there because you're going to find a lot of friends there. We're really excited right now, Prime Minister. We have photographers fanning out all over Afghanistan, taking pictures of the horror that's happening there in the wake of the biggest debacle in the history of foreign policy, the Biden withdrawal from Afghanistan, that catastrophe, his no regrets winter, the winter of no regrets. Well, we're going to flood Getter with these photos. I've gotten these Afghan photographers to get, they have Getter accounts now. And in the coming weeks, we're going to start flooding the world with images of what no regrets looks like, what a no regrets winter looks like. So Getter's a place where I think we can feel free. You know, I never thought that the human rights work that I do would be censored by the mainstream media and the big tech. You know, when we went to that, which game was it? Oh, when we were at the game in Washington, D.C. and we got thrown out. Do you know when they replayed the game, they edited out the few seconds where the cameras were right on our big, big banner, Free the Uyghur? It was ESPN edited out for the replay.
Wow. I mean, that's... You know, they seemingly have sold their soul.
If they had a soul to sell, I just think that it's sorrowful. I actually pity them. I pity them. But Prime Minister Hadai, I told you I was going to only take 30 minutes because I wasn't feeling that good. But I really wanted to have you on to respond because your voice needs to be heard. You know, the good news is a lot of people are talking about what this soulless vermin said, CP. Say his name again. I'm going to butcher it.
Chamath. His last name is Polypathia.
Polypathia. Polypathia, this guy. A lot of people are talking about him, but you never hear any Uyghur voices in the press unless it's you. And I wanted to make sure we got your voice. And that's something else that's very sad. You know, that we have this big genocide and we should see Uyghur leaders and the news on Newsweek. They should be in all the mainstream print magazines and newspapers constantly being quoted. They should be on all the talking head shows and it's not. And so I'm just grateful that on my show, you always have a voice.
Thank you. God bless you, Jason. You know, you're one of... I wish we had a lot of friends like you, but we are grateful to have you. You're one of the, if not the most, you know, loyal and steadfast friend that we have.
I'm with you guys till this is over, and I'm looking forward to going to East Turkestan with you and you showing me around. This is my dream.
God willing, it'll be much sooner than later.
God willing. I'm praying for that, brother. All right, I'm going to land this plane, and you get back to your family, and I'm looking forward to you. We're going to be at the March for Life together. We're going to have a big banner that says Boycott the Genocide Olympics. Prime Minister, we're printing up stickers, thousands of stickers calling on people to boycott the Genocide Olympics. We're going to be at the March for Medical Freedom on Sunday in Washington, D.C., stickering everybody with those stickers, and the March for Life, stickering everybody. And you'll like this. I'm going to be in the VIP tent. And everyone in the VIP tent that's going to be interviewed on all the news programs, one of my tricks is to put the stickers right, you know, on their chest, right where the news cameras can focus in on. So we're going to be there together. And at the Students for Life of America conference, we're going to have a booth getting all these student clubs to commit to spreading the message to college campuses all across the United States. And so I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Likewise. Thank you so much. God bless.
All right. God bless you, brother. All right. That's the great Prime Minister Salih Hidayat, a real leader. He will be a household name, you know, in our lifetime. He is a great advocate for the Uyghur people. He's fearless. He suffered a lot. You know, so many Uyghurs suffer a lot. When I was in Washington, D.C. at the International Religious Freedom Conference, there was a young Uyghur woman who played for me. All of the message, we interviewed her on the show. You should go back and listen to it. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. But she, you know, she played for me the endless hours of messages that Chinese intelligence officers leave her on her phone, threatening her family, threatening her life here in the United States. And I had asked her if she had tried to reach out to the FBI. Yes. Have they ever gotten back to you? No. So you have an American citizen being harassed by a foreign nation state night and day. And our FBI doesn't even return her calls. You know, imagine if that were an ex-boyfriend filling up her phone day and night with how he's going to kill and torture her family members if he doesn't come back, if she doesn't come back to him. That's what these messages were. If you don't come back, we will keep your sister in prison for 30 years. If you come back, we'll keep her in prison for 15 years and you in prison for 15 years. If you don't come back, we're going to hurt your sister. Imagine if somebody said that. If you don't come back to me, I'm going to hurt your family. Well, that's what the CCP does. And where are our law enforcement agencies? Where is the media? Is this not a story? Is this not like the biggest story in the world? An American citizen is being, a young woman is being relentlessly hounded by a foreign nation state and her life and the life of her family is being threatened. Isn't this something an investigative journalist would want to cover, would want to look into? No. Why? Because China's fingers are in everything. And we are soulless materialists that are not willing to sacrifice anything. Nothing. Not, you know, but we are. That's, we are. The Jason Jones Show is. And that's why I commit to not 1 minute of the Olympics. Now, I have to be fair to you. Honest with you, I'm not a Winter Olympics fan. But I am a UFC and heavy, I'm a boxing fan. But if the CCP were, you know, bought the UFC, I'm not watching the UFC, period, ever again. And it wouldn't even be a temptation. And you know what? Not one product from the CCP. And a lot of people are thinking, well, of any of the sponsors for the Genocide Olympics. And a lot of you are thinking, that's impossible. We have to be creative. My 30-year-old daughter, for 15 years, has never bought anything that wasn't from Goodwill. Nothing. Ever. She gave up portable music devices in 2010. Nothing. None of that. So you have to be creative, right? But it's fun. You go to antique shops. You look for clothes there. You go to Goodwill. You do what you do, but you're not going to buy anything made with cotton picked by slaves. You're not going to buy anything from Nike, right? You're just never going to buy a Coca-Cola product again. I was just disturbed to find that Topo Chico, something I love, was owned by Coca-Cola. Yeah, you're going to do it. You're just not going to do it. These are things that we have to do. We are not going to watch 1 minute of the Olympics, and we are not going to buy one product ever again from any company that sponsors the Genocide Olympics because it's shameful, and they do know. Trust me, they've had meetings after meetings, Zoom calls after Zoom calls after Zoom calls. Occasionally, maybe they met in person, all masked up, you know, double masked, because they're so concerned about their well-being. Well, they talked about how to protect their brand while still sponsoring the Olympics. And so it's thoughtless to the Uyghur. They got their double masks, or they won't meet in person. They're having crisis Zoom calls on how to mitigate the consequences of sponsoring the Olympics in light of the, and this guy, this NBA, this owner of this NBA, CP here, this guy, all these brands that are sponsoring the Olympics, they want to break this guy's legs right now. I can promise you that, because this guy gave our story wings, And if you've been listening to the Jason Jones Show, we were the first podcast in the world to tell you about the ethnic cleansing that was happening in Chinese occupied East Turkestan. Right? We were the very first. I tell my organization, you know, our team, that our mission at the Vulnerable People Project, which is the sponsor of this show, is to stand with the vulnerable when no one else will. You know, and then as it becomes popular, as it gains steam, as the world begins to know, once there's the momentum, you know, we push the car until it starts, and then we find a new car to push, right? Because this is our mission. There's enough really talented, brilliant, good-looking, well-funded people well-funded organizations with lots of staff that will do the easy work. So we'll let them. They're brilliant. They're smart. They're good-looking. They're well-funded. They deserve an easy way in life. But at the Vulnerable People Project, no, you know, everyone here is good looking but me. That's true. And they're actually very talented and smart. I don't know what they're doing at this. But for me, you know, this is what I'm called to do. Not that smart, not that talented, not good looking, not well funded. But thanks to you, we are getting this show. This, by the way, this podcast, which was something I really did to interview my friends who were very interesting in my garage when the show started. As I said in the first episode, I want to interview my friends who are the heroes in advancing human rights. I want to talk about genocide, democide, and war, but no one wants to hear that. So I'll try to become winsome and entertaining. Like 3 years in, I have not accomplished that yet, but I will. I promise. I'm going to take a master class. I'm going to do improv. I'm going to figure it out. But the goal is to become winsome and funny. And when you're not paying attention, we're going to talk about these issues. And so we've been talking about these issues. And something I did not expect is this little podcast would grow to being in the top 0.5%, I believe, of podcasts in the world. And we're in every continent but Antarctica. So if you know of anyone in Antarctica, I would love to just have one listener there every week, because we have listeners in almost every country in the world every week. And there are no scientists in Antarctica listening to the Jason Jones Show. And so many of you started supporting us. And it's been a game changer. And it's been a game changer for our work in Afghanistan. It was not budgeted. It was not in the 2021 budget. We did not expect it. And it became a big dent in the organization. But in large part to the Jason Jones Show audience, we were able to evacuate, resettle. We're continuing to evacuate. We're continuing to resettle. And the really big task we've been doing for the past 8, 9, 10 weeks now is delivering food and coal to every corner in Afghanistan. We can get food and coal to almost anywhere in Afghanistan in 24 hours, most places within 4. So when vulnerable communities find us and they're vetted, we get them relief within 24 hours. And that's all thanks to you. That is your hard work. So we still need your support. If you're listening to this long rambling conclusion, I need your support more than anybody. So go to thegreatcampaign.org and become a monthly donor. This is a game changer for us. As our monthly budget grows, it expands the work that we know that we can do, because the last thing we want to do is make promises to vulnerable communities that we cannot keep. So our monthly donors are really the foundation of our ability to make commitments. So go to thegreatcampaign.org, become a monthly donor, and as you know, you get The Race to Save Our Century by me and John Zmirak. We have to get him back on and hear about his struggle, his epic battle with COVID. John is just now climbing out of the COVID fog. We'll have him soon, but you get our book, The Race to Save Our Century. And of course, this episode is being brought to you by MyPillow.com. And when I became a partner with MyPillow, they sent me all their products. I thought they did not send me their comforter, and now I'm sick. And I'm thinking it's because of this cold weather that just swept into Hill Country. And I didn't have a comforter. I didn't have a nice comforter. I never dress right. I never prepare. You know, 31 years in Hawaii, I'm never prepared for this weather. I didn't have a comforter. So I'm ordering the comforter, and I'm going to use the code Jones. So go to MyPillow.com. There is a special on comforters right now. You got to get those slippers, wear your plush socks, wear some nice fluffy white socks with those slippers, or you don't even need those socks if it's, you know, but if it's cold, I get cold. If it's like 65 degrees, I start shivering. My daughter said to me last week, it was my son Max. He said to me, I'm not going to tell you the temperature until I tell you what he said. He said, "Dad, nobody ever gets used to this kind of weather. This is brutal." This is a boy raised in Hawaii. "Nobody ever gets used to this weather." And it was 54 degrees out. So for those of you listening in most parts of the Northern Hemisphere right now, that's funny to you. Yeah, no one ever gets it. I said, "Son, when I was a boy in Chicago, 54 degrees in January was put on your jersey, grab the football, and put on your shorts. Don't worry about shoes. We're playing football all day." But 31 years in Hawaii thinned out my blood. So go to MyPillow.com, get those comforters, Use the code Jones. I know a lot of you listen to Eric Metaxas too, and you listen to those. Eric Metaxas is a New York Times best-selling author. He does not need you. He does not need your code. But you need the. You know, I need your code. You need to use the code Jones because the Vulnerable People Project needs your support. So if you're going to go to MyPillow.com, all those big shot, big shows that you listen to, Bongino and Huckabee, I don't know. Does Huckabee have a show anymore? I don't know. Hannity, they all got the code. Everyone has a code because Mike Lindell supports all of us, right? So you got to choose. I know you have to choose which code to use. Well, J-O-N-E-S is the easiest to spell, and we need you. We need you. We are so grateful for Mike Lindell. So go there, buy everything. Go shopping. Get the comforter, get the pillows, get the Giza Dream sheets, and use the code Jones. And one of the things I'm going to ask Mike Lindell, I haven't yet because we've been so swamped with movements and deliveries, and it's been really busy in Afghanistan the past couple of weeks. But we're working at resettling people now, not just in the United States, but in other countries around the world. And I shouldn't say this, when I share out loud what like animates me, it's cheesy, but I tell my team that I'm really inspired by the Knights Hospitaller, known as the Knights of St. John. They came from the wealthiest families in Europe. They invented the hospitals. The Hospitaller comes from a hospital. Hospital comes from Hospitaller. And these young men from the wealthiest families in Europe would sleep on wood planks and eat porridge. And as these poor pilgrims would travel to the Holy Land from Europe, they'd get sick or injured or wounded. They'd need care. These Knights of the Hospitaller, you know, sleeping in the dirt, would put these poor pilgrims in feather beds with feather pillows, right? And they would eat off, this is true, silver plates. They would eat off silverware. And that's how they treated these peasants. So I see in our work, I hit the cough button there. I see in our work these refugees, by the way, so many of them are engineers and architects and lawyers, you know, much more talented and intelligent than me. And so I want to treat them, all of them, though, with the respect that they deserve. So I really want to, for those that come to America, we're putting together gift packages with the resettlement grant and the Federalist Papers and the Constitution and some other gifts. But I want to include my pillows. And why is that? That's my wink to the Knights of the Knights Hospitaller, the Knights of St. John. That's my wink at them. You know, that's going to be my version of a down pillow. So that's it. That's all. I got to ask Mike to do that. Hey, Mike, if you're listening, have one of your people call us so we can get your wonderful pillows to these brave families, these men and women that fought alongside our U.S. Armed Forces and were abandoned by the Biden administration in Afghanistan to their death, but by God's grace and through great organizations working in the United States, got them here, got them home to their new home. We want to get them your pillow. So go to mypillow.com, use the code Jones. I am off to Washington, D.C. I will be at the March for Life. I will be at Students for Life of America's conference, and I will be at the March for Medical Freedom on Sunday. So if you're going there, you know, go to our website, send us a message, and look for me. We're going to have a booth at SFLA's conference where we're going to be signing up all the youth groups to show our new movie, Divided Hearts of America, starring Benjamin Watson. And also Prime Minister Hedaya will be there, where we will be signing up all these clubs, these pro-life clubs. We're going to ask them to leverage their organizations to advocate for the Uyghur. And this is why this is exciting to me. Another digression, that I'm at the SFLA conference and I'm speaking to the young people too. My whole mission came from when I was a college student and I had a pro-life student union that I founded. And as embattled as we were, this pro-life club, and I was chairman of the College Republicans, as embattled as we were on campus, I found out that these groups, these other groups that were fighting for their own communities, they were suffering genocide. For example, I was some Chinese groups were trying to get Wei Zhenxing freed, who was freed, actually 2 weeks after we led a protest in Hawaii. I found that as embattled as we felt that we were, that if I lent the strength of my pro-life student union and the college Republicans to these groups, groups that normally I don't think people on college campuses would see as allies. And I didn't see ourselves as allies to them. I saw that we could serve them, that we had a little bigger, actually a much bigger platform. And so now to be at the Students for Life of America conference, which I think is the most important college organization in the United States of America, and these young people are the most beautiful human beings on earth that make up this organization, and it's big. There are going to be thousands of kids there, even with all of D.C.'s nonsensical, insane restrictions. These are brave young people that I'm going to get to bring Prime Minister Salihudaya, the leading voice in the Western world for the Uyghur, to come and speak to them on stage with me and sort of be a continuation of the work that started for me at the University of Hawaii in the 90s. I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful for you. I hope you subscribe. Give us 5 stars. I never ask. And I always mean to ask. Give us 5 stars. Like and review. Share the show. Until next time. It's the Jason Jones Show.
This has been the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media.